Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
Let's go to another topic. The Casillo family has spent 25 years as Michael Jackson's most credible defenders. They testified at his 2005 criminal trial. They went on Oprah. Frank Casillo wrote a memoir called My Friend Michael, insisting Jackson never harmed anyone. Now all five siblings have filed a federal lawsuit alleging Jackson drugged, essayed, and trafficked them, starting when some of them were as young as 7 years old. The estate is calling it a $200 million extortion scheme and pointing to a 2019 settlement the Casillos already accepted. A judge is set to rule very soon on whether the case goes to public trial or disappears into private arbitration. Former felony prosecutor and criminal defense attorney Eric Faddis is joining me and Robin Drake to break down the legal battle, the credibility questions, and what's really at stake when accusers spend decades defending the accused before changing their story. Eric, welcome. The Casillo siblings defended Michael Jackson for over 25 years. Interviews, testimony, a memoir. And they're alleging now that he was a serial predator who trafficked and abused them since childhood. From a prosecutor's perspective, how devastating is this in terms of being a credibility problem for them? 25 years of sworn statements, defending someone, creating an insurmountable obstacle. Does this create an insurmountable obstacle, I guess, for any claim against him? What's your thoughts on the strength of this case that they're bringing against the estate?
For any potential criminal charges, it's a complete non-starter. There is just no chance a defense attorney would eat these folks alive. Whether they're telling the truth now, whether they were telling the truth before, there is such a discrepancy. There are so many inconsistencies, so many contradictory statements. No chance in hell that a criminal prosecution would be successful. In terms of on the civil side, you know, you have a lower burden and you hire experts who would opine as to, hey, people who are sexually assaulted, they usually don't want to talk about that. They usually, in fact, they might come forward and say, hey, that this didn't happen and things like that. But still, I just can't imagine any successful lawsuit, criminal or civil, with that kind of a backdrop.
How do you, because you're so right on that. Just looking at the stats and the research of these types of things, you know, like you said, the defense would probably say, you know, that these things get leakage over time or they got therapy. But people don't go from 0 to 100 of, hey, everything's completely fine, to all of a sudden today, 25 years later, all of us at the same time are saying it was this. So how could, obviously, as you said, on a bigger level, they can't do it, but on a civil level, they might try to do that. What are some of the things that a prosecutor would do to try to overcome that credibility issue?
Yeah, you know, if in the civil side, plaintiff's counsel who represent the Casillos, you know, they, like I said, they're experts who are who can talk about latent outcries, who can talk about the evolution of a recollection. They can talk about repressed memories, although that's a controversial topic. And just say, you know, you could talk about the societal pressure. This guy was the biggest star in the world for a long time. And these people were very close to him. And you have mixed feelings about folks. You know, when you're close to someone and they wrong you, that sucks and it hurts. But you also might have some other feelings towards them that are favorable. And how do you resolve those, especially if you're you're young in age, when all of this occurs, maybe you don't reach that resolution until much later in life, and they've reached that resolution now. That's the way their attorney could try to style.
Is it helpful or hurtful that all are coming together at the same time? Because that, I think, is the hard part to overcome. But I don't know. I haven't done one in court before, but that seems like a really hard hurdle to overcome. It's like all of a sudden, all of us had the same revelation. Is that hard for the prosecution, you think?
You know, yes and no. I think for the plaintiff's side, the Cassio side, what they're going to say is, hey, it's not one person just coming out and saying this. It's not two people, but it's like the whole family. Like they had this awakening. They had this come to Jesus moment where they were like, hey, guys, we've been wrong about this forever, and now is the time to tell the truth. But on the defense side, they're going to say, hey, these folks are looking for a payday, man. This has been going on for decades. They've been saying the exact opposite story. Now they're all coming forward. Now they all want millions and millions of dollars, even after they allegedly received a settlement. They're greedy and asking for more. So I think it can be played multiple ways.
What's interesting to me on this case is the fact that they're all coming together at the same time, and they're all saying, oh, see, we all had this realization. We all got together and started sharing stories. And look, I mean, these sort of things happen. They happen in families a lot, where it's like, oh, you and Uncle so-and-so, that happened to you too. And sometimes revelations are made in adulthood many years after the abuse. But that's usually after many, many years of quiet and nobody speaking this stuff out loud. The idea that Michael Jackson was doing this to kids is not a new topic. This family is well aware of all of this. They even signed a settlement agreement with the Jackson estate in 2019, reportedly $690,000 per sibling per year for 5 years. That included confidentiality, non-disparagement, and mandatory arbitration clauses. Now they're trying to void the agreement, claiming it was signed under duress without proper legal counsel. It's a very different dynamic than the situation of family kind of making a realization about somebody over here, and none of this has been talked about. This has been the conversation forever surrounding Michael Jackson. So the idea and them pitching this as, oh, who would have thought Michael would have done any of these things? I don't know. Everybody and their brother, anybody who was in or close to the Jacksons like you guys were, this would have been the main topic of conversation and has been forever. Again, Robin, I want to throw that to you. Like, behavioral wise, how absurd is it to think that this family just had this aha moment all simultaneously, and they were all holding this back from each other for all these years, and now suddenly, gosh, we got to get what we're owed?
You know me. You know, I already did the research on all this. It's completely absurd. So what happens typically is there's a lot of red flags that happen along the way before this. That's why I was curious about, you know, Eric and, you know, the what they would try to do to prove it. Because first of all, these things don't go from 0 to 100. They come from emotional leakage. They come from counseling. And it's typically not all people at the same time. Now, granted, one person could spur everyone to get counseling to do it, but it doesn't go this way. It is one person or a couple of them that decide to get counseling. Then there's reluctance that actually leaks out because they don't want to come forward. I mean, think about this. Do the thought experiment. So here's a family that was very, very close. Michael trusted them. They met through the father that was the manager of the hotel that Michael stayed at, and they all became friends, and Michael traveled with them. This family became Michael's anchor for many, many years, and they wrote memoirs. And for that flip, it doesn't happen like this. If it's real, it actually comes from a little bit here, a little bit there, and it would take 25 years of building, of leakage, of reluctance, and all of a sudden they have an epiphany. But it didn't go from 0 to 100. It was a gradual, like everything in life, it's an arc, and this does not have an arc to it at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I'm not saying that Michael Jackson may not have been doing these things. I have no idea. There certainly is a lot of evidence that Michael Jackson, certainly, and I think it's beyond evidence, Michael Jackson did not understand how to have healthy relationships with other people, period. And what his boundaries were beyond gray. was he doing things to children? I would, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence that points to it. But without actual proof, without, you know, there's not going to be a video. There's not going to be, I mean, who knows? I guess anything's possible. But, you know, without actual proof, smoking gun evidence, and he's dead, and he's been dead for almost 20 years now, believe it or not, which I was shocked by. Like, that was almost 20 years ago.
Dude, you're making us feel really old, Tony.
I know. I mean, it's like we're in 17, 18 years since he died. I know. But it's without any of that, it's their word against an estate. How easy of a money grab is it when you're going after an estate and someone that can't defend themselves anymore? And that is, the estate's interest is in, you know, keeping money flowing from whatever exists in the estate, and just kind of shutting this sort of stuff down. Is that an easy grab for somebody like this, or for a family like this, if this is what the goal is? And we don't know, but is that an easy thing to achieve because Michael's dead, or are they really kind of counting their chickens before they've hatched?
It's not as easy as it might appear on its face. You know, like you said, there is the circumstance where the accused cannot give their story. They can't say, hey, that's not what happened. I can prove it in this fashion. And it's just decades ago. On the other hand, you know, it's difficult because in these civil claims, you typically want and often need information from the at-fault side. And so you would depose them and you would try to, you know, identify where they were when these things took place and try to identify corroborating circumstances and evidence and link this all together through that discovery process. But there's not going to be that kind of process, at least with respect to a decedent. So you don't have the counterattack from the accuser, but you also don't have access to much of the evidence that you would need to get the thing across the finish line.
Yeah, Eric, besides their opinions of what they think they were exposed to from Michael, what kind of things is the judge going to be looking for to actually prove it beyond, hey, this is what he did to me? I mean, and what kind of things do you think they could actually provide their lawyer would try to provide the judge and jury to actually prove that this happened besides a collective four or five people's opinions?
You know, if the Cassios are able to get out from under this purported settlement agreement, then the claims would be adjudicated on their merits. But that's a big if. You know, I think the judge is probably going to look at this and say, hey, you guys entered into a settlement and you got stupid money for it, and now you just want more money. I'm going to shut this down or at least send it to arbitration to determine if that settlement stands. If it does not stand, then you got to take it, and it's usually to a jury, and you got to convince them these things happen. What more do you have from something that happened 20, 30 years ago but a person's testimony? You know, it's going to be under oath. It's going to be corroborated by the co-plaintiffs. But you, like Tony said, you probably don't have pictures. You probably don't have photographs. You don't have texts. You don't have emails. None of those things even really existed back then.
Yeah. I don't have the access to my research on this at the second. What's the probability of success in these types of cases that it actually works, just doing it with no hard physical evidence and just people's opinions?
Oh, I think the probability is low, but does it result in some leverage that could result in some additional compensation short of going to trial? You know, maybe the estate says, hey, this didn't happen. We don't believe you, but it's going to cost millions to go to trial. We'll pay you $1 million to shut up and go away.
I mean, is that the legal play here in so many of these cases, right, where it's like, it's going to cost us more, we're going to win, but it's going to cost us more to do that. So it's more to our advantage of saying, here's some money, go away. Not because we're admitting guilt, but because it makes more financial sense to do that. And they know that.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you're a high-profile person, you look at the Diddy lawsuits and, you know, some of those, there are credible accusations. Mm-hmm. Some of those, there are not credible accusations, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But the Diddy's team is motivated to try to get some resolution on this stuff. And usually when you tender a financial settlement, like from Diddy or the Michael Jackson estate or whatever, you expressly say, we are not admitting any kind of wrongdoing. We're simply paying for this to kind of go away. And those things happen all the time.
And it's basically a legalized extortion because that's how our system makes it work, unfortunately. I mean, one more question on this because, I mean, credibility matters. Certainly, I would think in a case like this, maybe not when we get down to that level of it's cheaper just to make it go away, but if this were to actually go to court, this family, they have a history of lies, fake songs. And that's an interesting thing. Several years back, Michael Jackson posthumously put an album out, and some of the tracks were supposedly recorded in the Casio's basement. You may remember this. I remember this when this album came out, and people were like, that doesn't sound like Michael. Producers who were on the album have said, yeah, I was bamboozled. They said this was his material. We don't believe it was. Sony has since actually removed the tracks from streaming services because they believe they were not Michael Jackson either. But the family argued it forever. No, these are really, really his tracks. They gave them to the producers to produce and put out as Michael Jackson's work. Turns out that allegedly was all complete bunk. Kind of a big deal, kind of a big, big lie surrounding Michael Jackson that they're willing to perpetuate as long as the cash keeps coming in. It's part of the record. It's not part of the story of was he doing these things to you inappropriately, but it is part of the record of Michael Jackson and their relationship with him. And part of that record shows them lying about him.
Here's the thing. Nearly any time you bring a civil claim, especially one like this, you're putting your credibility at issue. And so that opens you up to, hey, have you ever engaged in an act of dishonesty in your life? You know, as every human being at some point to some degree. Yes. And those acts of dishonesty can be the subject of discovery. You know, it can be the subject of deposition, certainly the subject of trial testimony if it got that far. So their credibility is going to be central. Because that's kind of all they have. All they have is their word. They don't have like corroborating evidence due to whatever circumstances. And when you have some prior fraud, not just any fraud, but fraud against the person whom you're accusing again, that's a bad look, man. It kind of looks like you're just sort of ganging up on this person because you think you can get a payday. And I imagine there's other acts of dishonesty that the defense will allege of these claimants. And yeah, it's already kind of a dicey look. Could be worse.
Yeah. It's a damning look. It's a dicey look. But at the end of the day, if you can extort somebody for money, that's the American way, isn't it? I mean, that seems to be how so many of these things go, unfortunately. Fascinating continuing chapter. I mean, this I really wonder how many centuries are lawsuits going to be continued to be filed against Michael Jackson?
And when you sent the notes last night that were covering Michael Jackson, I had to do a double take. Like, are you talking about Michael Jackson again? It's like, oh my gosh, what's going on here?
I'm waiting for it at some point where it's going to be my father was abused by Michael Jackson. And because of that, his parenting, he abused me or something happened in my life, and I'm going to blame it on Michael Jackson as well. I mean, who knows? I mean, and that's true. I mean, there is intergenerational trauma that can happen, but it just seems like if you want a payday, Michael Jackson seems to be the place that people have gone to for many years. And Michael Jackson, by his own choices, set himself up for this to go on into infamy. From whatever reason that is, ignorance, being too isolated, who the hell knows?
Or actually doing it, we don't know.
Exactly. Was he actually? We don't know. But it certainly, he did nothing to help his cause or his argument by any stretch of the imagination. Fascinating case. Eric Faddis, as always, thanks for joining us and giving us your insight. Robin Drake, as always, fascinating conversation. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts. You don't miss any of our updates and any of the cases we follow for you right here. Give us your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and on YouTube.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.